It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in sunny, breezy Kodiak, Alaska, where they have wind speeds steady at 24 at the airport from the west, gusting to 41. Sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near, well, we're past the high predicted of 43. These west winds are expected to continue 35 to 40, gusting as high as 50 today. Clear skies tonight with a low around 35 and northwest winds to 35. Coming up on the Midday Report, allegations of abuse at a Kodiak area preschool. Crab shortages are hitting seafood restaurants, and the price is much higher than last year. Soap carving in Dillingham replaces some ivory carving. A Christmas tradition in Skagway that includes a present for every kid who shows up. And a Fairbanks woman recounts her struggle to free her dog from a trap. Those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. In Minneapolis, a mostly white jury has convicted a former suburban police officer of first-degree and second-degree manslaughter in the fatal shooting of 20-year-old Dante Wright, who was black. Judge Regina Chu read the decision.
We, the jury, on the charge of manslaughter in the first degree while committing a misdemeanor on or about April 11, 2021, in Hennepin County, state of Minnesota, find the defendant guilty.
Supporters of Wright's family waited outside the courthouse.
Justice! Justice!
Wright died when Potter fired her handgun at him as he attempted to evade arrest on a firearms warrant last April. She says she believed she was firing her taser. Prosecutors argue that Potter acted recklessly. A second COVID-19 pill has federal approval, this one from Merck. Yesterday, the FDA approved the first anti-COVID pill. NPR's Joe Palca has more on that drug from Pfizer.
The drug is called Paxlovid. Since it can be taken as a pill, patients can take it at home. It works by interfering with an enzyme the virus needs to replicate once it infects someone. A study of the drug has shown it can reduce the risk of hospitalization and death by as much as 90% for some COVID patients if taken within 3 to 5 days of the onset of symptoms. The drug comes in packs containing pills for a 5-day course of the treatment. At first, supplies of the drug will be limited. Pfizer expects to be able to supply around 180,000 packs by the end of this year and tens of millions of packs in 2022. Joe Palca, NPR News.
The spread of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus has taken the world by surprise. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio promises with vaccinations and mask wearing, the city will get through it.
It's going to be a tough few weeks, but it will only be a few weeks. Omicron has come on real fast, but it will be over soon.
The Biden administration says it's ready to hold talks with Russia about European security. NPR's Michelle Kellerman has more.
A U.S. official describes Russia's military movements near Ukraine as alarming and says if Russia reinvades, the U.S. and its partners have prepared tough sanctions. It will also bring about what the Russians say they don't want, more NATO assets closer to Russia's border. The official who briefed reporters but asked not to be named says there is another path, one that involves bilateral talks in the NATO-Russia Council, and in the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. The U.S. and its partners have a long list of concerns that they will bring to the table. Russia has already set out proposals, some of which the U.S. dismissed as non-starters. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
The Dow is ending the day up 196. This is NPR. The CDC is investigating two separate listeria outbreaks linked to packaged salads. The companies involved are Dole and Fresh Express, and they have recalled their products. The FDA is also investigating. The probe was launched after 26 cases of illness were reported. 22 people were hospitalized. 3 have died. American writer Joan Didion has died at age 87, known first for magazine articles about her home state of California. She was a best-selling author of books and more. NPR's Susan Stamberg reports.
Joan Didion's 2005 memoir about the death of her husband, The Year of Magical Thinking, became a bestseller. In 2011, Blue Nights told of the death of her daughter. These losses marked the later years in a reporting life that charted some of America's cultural milestones: hippies, the Black Panthers, the U.S. after 9/11. Didion's novels, Play It As It Lays and A Book of Common Prayers, among others, examined in elegant, sparse prose the underlying dark truths of contemporary life. Her reportage influenced a generation of journalists. Her fiction compelled readers to reflect on what she called her cautionary tales. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
Tesla has agreed to send out a software update over the internet that prevents the playing of video games on center touch screens while vehicles are moving. This after an investigation by federal auto safety regulators. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include American Jewish World Service, supporting human rights advocates worldwide as they respond to COVID-19 and defend democratic rights. Learn more at ajws.org and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Allegations of serious abuse from this fall have surfaced at a Kodiak area preschool. As KMXT's Dylan Simard reports, administrators have acknowledged that law enforcement are involved in the investigation, and so far at least one family has removed their children from the school in response.
An email to families went out from Kodiak Baptist Mission's leadership after details of child abuse by preschool staff surfaced on social media in mid-December. Executive Director Johnny Walker wrote on December 18th that in one case in October, a staff member had picked up a crying child to console him, and that parents had been concerned about bruises on an arm. He says touching a child was a violation of school rules, and the teacher was suspended. He says a second complaint, also in October, was related to allegations of sexual abuse, which he called implausible. The email says Alaska State Troopers have asked the preschool not to discuss any allegations as it could interfere with the investigation. The two unnamed accused employees no longer work at Kodiak Baptist Mission, the email added. But some former parents have criticized the school's handling of the allegations. Molly O'Dell's daughter had attended Kodiak Baptist Mission's preschool earlier this year. She says she attended an October 29th meeting called by the school to discuss the allegations of child abuse by staff. She says she was disappointed by the school's reaction, which she said downplayed the seriousness of the matter.
I was appalled, and I was really disappointed with his response. And it just supports mine and my husband's decision to take our child out of the mission, which, like I said, it was a hard decision. She, by all of her accounts, had a great time there.
Alaska State Troopers have not commented on the case except to confirm there are two investigations pending in Kodiak. A public dispatch by state troopers reports opening a sexual abuse of a minor investigation on October 27th. The Kodiak Baptist Mission's administrators haven't publicly addressed the allegations. It declined to comment to KMXT or the Kodiak Daily Mirror, which first reported on the allegations on Tuesday. In a brief conversation, Walker said the school is cooperating with investigators, but declined to elaborate. The Kodiak Baptist Mission Preschool is licensed by the State Department of Health and Social Services. State officials did not respond to requests about its licensing arrangements. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
People adorn Christmas trees with all kinds of things: strings of lights, stars, popcorn, glass ornaments, and soap. This winter, a Dillingham High School art teacher wanted to help students create decorations for their trees by carving ornaments from soap instead of ivory. KDLG's Izzy Ross went to the school's art night and has this story.
Walking into the gym, a faint perfume fills the air. Stacks of white soap sit on a table, alongside wood and metal sculpting tools.
So if you mess up, no big deal.
The school's art night is off to a slow start. It's the last day of school before winter break in Dillingham. The community is in the throes of another blizzard, and classes were canceled. Still, art teacher Eric Prowker is resolute.
Tonight, we are carving Yupik masks into bars of soap to replicate ivory. We are doing this as Christmas ornaments that you can hang on trees. They are light enough to hang on the tree branches and make a tree smell good.
Soap brands each have a different consistency. Ivory, the soap, not the tusk, is softer, while Dove and Dial are harder.
I'm actually pretty happy with the way it turned out. This was a Dial bar, so it was more of an hourglass shape. The imprint of the brand was fairly deep into the soap, so I had to carve away more than I wanted to. The design is based after a Yupik dancer's facial expression.
In Yupik culture, some masks represent spirits, animals, and natural forces. Traditionally, masks are used in ceremonial dances and as a form of prayer or storytelling, and often destroyed after the ceremony. As Westerners arrived in the late 19th century, people would trade masks for goods. Christian missionaries also suppressed masked dancing in many areas. Despite that, indigenous people continued the tradition. Prowker says he wanted to help his students with a culturally relevant project.
When I think of soap, I think of ivory carvings, and we kind of steered towards maybe some type of mask-making design or an ivory carving, and that's kind of how the idea snowballed.
Let's see what we can do. And you're more than welcome to join us.
As we talk, a few people trickle in and sit down to carve, full of ideas.
I'm trying a flower.
Oh, what about like a fish?
Yeah, fish, yeah.
I mean, it's just like...
just like a simple outline of a salmon or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
Bob Kurtz has carved before.
Kind of a little bit in ivory, but this is softer, and this is really different.
So how has the class been so far?
Wonderful. Wonderful. Do it more often.
I was leaving the soap as is.
Mm-hmm.
As people keep carving, some designs change.
I decided I was going to do a butterfly. Didn't quite work.
Corrine Celestine is a substitute teacher from New Jersey who just finished a 3-month stint in Dillingham.
Ended up doing a dress. That didn't work out either. And now I decided to do a bottle of perfume with the initial CC, not for Coco Chanel, but for Corrine Celestine. Yeah, but I had a fun time. It was nice being out, you know, under the circumstances where school was canceled today.
I would say just looking at, like, your partner's face and kind of study the detail of their face, maybe something that is unique about them.
Yupik masks
something.
Have many purposes, and some are considered sacred. You can use soap to carve other types of ornaments at home, too. Prowker says all you need is a bar of soap and a few tools.
The wood tools carve pretty well. They don't take up as much soap as some of the metal trimming tools that you get for pottery. So just having a variation of pottery tools for sculpting is a good idea.
And, of course, in art, as in life, you don't have to get things right the first time.
It's okay to teach kids that failing and a failed attempt are not the same thing. Just because it didn't go right the first time doesn't mean you won't get it the second or the third time. You just figured out a way not to do it.
He says the more you practice, the better you'll become. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
There is a unique Christmas tradition in Skagway that's been happening every year since World War II. It's a show put on by a local charity that showcases music, elves, Santa, and Mrs. Claus, and includes a present for every kid who wants one. KHNS's Mike Swayze has this report.
On Christmas Eve in 1941, the Eagles Club in Skagway put on its first Christmas Eve pageant. It was a way for the town's kids to celebrate with Santa Claus and spread holiday cheer. The Eagles Club, an international fraternal order dedicated to charity, has kept the show going ever since, and this Christmas Eve will mark its 80th year. Chair of the club's Christmas committee, Kaylin Howard, says this year's show will start off with magician and musician Andrew Naden.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
He's going to do a little Christmas magic for the kids, lead us in 1 to 2 Christmas songs,
And then Mrs. Claus will also read a story to the kids. All the kids are invited to sit around the stage around her and listen to a story time. And then one of the biggest traditions that we've continued is, even though the music and the story will change every year, the one consistent is everybody then after story time sings Here Comes Santa Claus together as Santa arrives on stage.
Santa will then hand out gifts that he, Mrs. Claus, and the elves hand-wrapped for each child in attendance. Howard says the show has changed a bit over the years. It used to be called the Christmas Eve Pageant. Now it's called the Christmas Eve Show. Organizers changed that a few years ago because, well, there are no judges. Then, during the height of the pandemic in 2020, they had to get creative to find a way to spread joy and not COVID-19.
Our first COVID Christmas, it was drive-by only.
Santa and his elves were standing outside on Broadway as families drove up and got their presents through the car window. There was also a compilation of videos the club put together full of holiday songs from local artists. Howard says the committee agreed that the steps the community has taken to reduce the risks of contracting the virus have allowed the club to do the show in person again this year. In addition to magic and songs, there will be a couple of drawings at this year's event. There's a Shop in Skagway program that's been running all month in town, and people have put their names in for a grand prize that will be announced on stage. There will also be a drawing for the winner of the Nancy Shave Memorial Doll Raffle. Howard says that raffle is a fundraiser for a scholarship award that's given to a local student.
For many years, the Nancy Shave Memorial Doll Raffle was a $500 scholarship awarded to a graduating senior. Now, 2 years ago, we were actually able to raise enough money through the doll ticket sales that we upped the scholarship to a $1,000 scholarship for a local graduating senior.
She says the $2 tickets go on sale between Thanksgiving and Christmas Eve each year.
We put all of those names into a bowl, and we draw those, and the winner gets this American Girl doll with three outfits, a keepsake box, and a very beautiful dress that is modeled after a local's wedding dress. And that's all sewn and donated by Jean Worley. And she picks the bride every year, a local, and she picks their dress to replicate.
Jean Worley is a local tailor who's been making the dolls' wedding dresses for over 40 years. In Skagway, the unexpected is usually entertaining. A few years ago, Santa Claus had his pants fall down at the beginning of the show, and now there are several sets of suspenders at the ready. And as one of the show's organizers, Kat Stewart, recalls, another year one of the elves' dogs got loose.
Children got their faces licked, and it was adorable, even though it was very naughty.
This year, show organizers expect around 75 children to attend. Reporting from Skagway, I'm Mike Swayze.
A Fairbanks woman struggled with help from her friends and family to free her dog from a trap off a local area trail. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
Maria Berkland says she, her mom, and their 80-pound yellow lab mix, Philbin, had headed out on a trail from a parking area in the Rosie Creek area when Philbin, who was running free, got caught in a Conibear 330 trap, the largest of its type. She says Philbin was caught about 30 feet off the trail, his snout and neck clamped in the steel trap's twin jaws.
He's whining and crying, and we're looking at it, and we can see that there's these springs on the side. And then if we can get these springs together, there's a latch, and then we could open it back up.
But Berglund says they were unable to compress the springs enough to free the dog.
We were bracing against trees, pushing with all our strength, and like we could loosen it a little bit, and then he would get a little bit more air to breathe.
Berkland says she called her father, who drove over and met a veterinarian who happened to be in the parking lot. She says the vet had a leash they looped through the trap's springs for leverage.
And my mom and my dad pulled like as hard as they could, like using all of their strength, and then I latched it shut. And then we did that on both sides, and we were able to get him out.
Berkland says she learned the technique from friends she called while waiting for her dad to show up. She says Philbin spent about 40 minutes in the trap but did not sustain any serious injuries. Berkland says it turns out that the trap, as well as a few others in the area, were set off the public trail easement on private property without the owner's permission.
Which is kind of the only thing that made it illegal.
Berglund says she's heard that the traps have been removed by state wildlife troopers. She says after her experience, she plans to keep her dog Philbin on a ski jour line from now on.
It's sad because I feel like most people who use those trails, if your dog is friendly, pretty much everybody has their dogs off leash. But I just, I wouldn't feel comfortable now.
A trapping ethics video on the Alaska Trappers Association website emphasizes the importance of proper trap placement.
We need to think about the impact that a set trap will have on others. We shouldn't put traps near a busy road or in places that are used by other people or their pets. We don't want to risk trapping someone's dog.
The video also stresses knowing who owns land and if it's private property, getting the owner's permission before setting traps.
To do anything less is trespassing, a violation of law, and certainly not ethical behavior.
The Alaska Trappers Association provides information on how to free dogs from conibear and other traps and snares, and there are instructional videos on the topic available online. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Big fisheries and meetings are coming up. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Holidays aside, Alaska fishing stakeholders are gearing up for the start of some of the biggest fisheries and fish meetings. Starting January 1st, boats will drop pots and lines for cod and other groundfish in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea. Trawling for pollock, the nation's largest food fishery, begins on January 20th. A pollock fishery also opens that day in Prince William Sound. Fish and Game also is seeking trawlers for a pollock test fishery in the Sound to offset management costs. Bids are due at the Homer office by January 7th. A Tanner crab fishery opens on January 15th at Kodiak, Chignik, and the South Peninsula with a combined catch of 1.8 million pounds. Tanner crab and golden king crab fisheries open in Southeast on February 11th. Bering Sea crabbers have taken just 14% of their Tanner quota of about 1 million pounds, while the nearly 6 million pound golden king crab catch is about a wrap. No landings yet for snow crab, which typically gets going in mid-January. Southeast divers are still going down in some regions for sea cucumbers and geoduck clams. Alaska halibut fishermen took 93% of their 18.5 million pound catch limit when the fishery closed on December 7th. Halibut catches for 2022 will be announced at the annual International Pacific Halibut Commission meeting held online from January 24th through 28th. The State Board of Fisheries is planning to meet in person January 4th through 15th in Ketchikan. It will take up 157 proposals on Southeast and Yakutat commercial, sport, subsistence, and personal use fisheries. Finally, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council Crab Plan Team meets online January 10th through 14th. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 23rd day of December, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:53. It will set again at 4:24. That will give us 6 hours and 31 minutes of daylight, a gain of 16 seconds. Our record low for this date was set in 2001. That was a 2 degree low. Our record high was 56 degrees set in 1984. Currently 45 degrees out at the airport, 41 degrees here at the station. West wind blustery, and they're expected to blow to 40 miles per hour all day today. Turn to the northwest tonight to 35 tonight. But those, and then back to the west tomorrow, and it should come down to 15 tomorrow. Sunny skies today, clear skies tonight, and partly sunny skies tomorrow, with highs in the low 40s and low around 35 overnight tonight. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 3:52 this afternoon. It will be an 8.7-foot tide. That will be followed by a low tide at 10:44 p.m. of 0 feet. The next high tide will be at 5:27 a.m. and be 6.9 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:42 in the morning. That will be a 3.5-foot tide on our east side. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:23 this afternoon. That will be a 13.3-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:09 p.m. of 0 feet. Your next high tide will be at 5:43 a.m. and be a 12-foot tide. And our low tide for tomorrow morning in Larson Bay will be at 11:20 a.m. and be 5.25 feet. Mariners, you do have a gale warning for today for Marmon Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. West wind 35 knots, gusting to 50 today, seas to 12 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 30, becoming west 20 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning for today. West wind 35 knots today, gusting to 50 out of bays and passes, seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, west wind to 25 knots, becoming southwest 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 6 feet. Well, there's only today and a bit of tomorrow left for you to put a present under the KMXT Giving Tree. The presents will go to Brother Francis Shelter and Kodiak's Women's Resource and Crisis Center clients. Make someone's holiday a little brighter by bringing a gift to KMXT by 2 p.m. tomorrow, and we'll make sure they get to the shelter and the center. And if you don't have time to come by and pick up an ornament with a suggestion for a gift, give us a call at the station. The Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary have put up the Angels of Love holiday trees at the hospital. Each angel placed on the trees bears the name of a person being honored or remembered. The angels remain on the trees through the holiday season and can be obtained for a $10 donation. All donations are placed in the Auxiliary's Scholarship Fund to offer scholarships to individuals pursuing a career in healthcare. You can make your donation at the hospital admissions desk. Monday and Tuesday, the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association will offer fishing vessel drill conductor classes in Kodiak. The first class will be Monday the 27th from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. The second one on Tuesday the 28th from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. They will be meeting at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center on Trident Way. And then that will all be finished off with drills and a pool session on Wednesday the 29th. And that will happen from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The cost for each class is $125 for commercial fishermen. Interested mariners may register online at www.amsea.org. That's AMSEA.org. Or give them a call at 907-747-3287. The classes will cover cold water survival skills and many other things. It's an excellent opportunity for commercial fishermen and other mariners to gain hands-on training in marine safety equipment and learn the best practices for surviving emergencies at sea. Again, that number to call, 907-747-3287. Were you born in 1957? Did you know you will be eligible for Medicare starting in January? There were over 4 million babies born in 1957. That makes it the largest number of baby boomers born in one year. If this means you, you have a 7-month initial enrollment period when you turn 65 to sign up for Medicare. That's 3 months before your 65th birthday, the month of your birth, and 3 months after. This initial enrollment is very important even if you still plan to work and have employer-based insurance. Contact the Senior Center for more information at 486-6181. Don't forget to bring your friends and family to the Lutik Museum. Today is the last day that Mattson has generously sponsored free admission from everyone in Kodiak. The Lutik Museum opens at noon and will be open until 4 p.m. and it's located at 215 Mission Road. Mariners, the Coast Guard has been experiencing various VHF outages in southeast and south central Alaska. Repairs are ongoing, but due to extreme weather and remote locations, these outages are expected to continue in various locations, both in Southeast and South Central. Mariners are reminded that due to mountainous terrain and limited coverage, even with fully operational sites, the Coast Guard cannot hear all VHF calls in all areas, and mariners should have a secondary means of communication on board at all times, as well as file a float plan with a trusted person.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.